This week on RSBNB Update, the Battle of the Monolith begins and we bring light to accessibility and length. Moderate rumblings of discontent and our first battle report bring the lore home. Then we share our inventor's wish perk guide and delve into a pair of warden promises. This is RSBNB Update, episode 831, recorded Thursday, May 27th, 2021. Warden on the Warpath. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of RSBNB Update. This week is week one in the Battle of the Monolith, the kickoff to the Elder God Wars, and boy, do we have a big discussion on this. We also have the Leeds Q&A, and to join us in this discussion, Questscaping is here. Welcome aboard.
Hello, hello. Couldn't make it last week, but here I am this time.
One of the very predominant lore experts in Clan Quest and the wider lore community. We love your theories and we love having you on for these, so welcome back as per usual.
Thank you very much.
Tanis is also here, as he is each and every week. Had a bit of a fun little power outage before we began, but everything is going just as intended now.
Yep, we're here. Thank you, Shane.
We're going to dive all into this in just a moment, but I am Shane12088 in game. He is Tanis79, and Questscaping is, of course, Questscaping. And if you want to follow along, we do have full show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Battle of the Monolith. This update is one that I'm going to put this out there, and we're going to start this off by saying that last Friday we had to do some fancy production work with the podcast to capture this live stream, because this is a live stream that, you know, we were told, hey, there'd be a big reveal as to what was coming in the next week. I know a few of us, you, Questscaping, and myself, were leaning to the side that this might be another quest going into it.
Mm-hmm.
So we were getting all our ducks in a row, and we wanted to, you know, cover that launch on the podcast last Friday. Jagex streamed for a good number of hours before kicking off their 20-minute live stream or so, and this week we got the first part of this chapter. This is the part of a multi-week-long mini-quest running from now until June 21st. So this week, May 24th, June 1st, and so on and so forth every week until May 21st, we'll get a new chapter in this mini-quest. Now, let's talk a bit about how this plays out, and then we'll talk about a bit about the compartmentaling of this, let's just say, because that's something that I think threw a lot of people. Tanis, do you have any opening thoughts before we get into the actual mini-quest itself?
Opening thoughts. I really liked the beginning cutscene.
Like the ramp up, yeah.
Yeah, I liked the ramp up. It definitely got me engaged. And then we'll talk about, you know,
how
it went from there. But yeah.
Questscaping, what were you thinking going into this? Because, you know, we were thinking quest, but then we realized this is a mini quest. How long were you anticipating that you would spend on this on day one?
Well, I wasn't expecting, because the clan live stream we did managed to take about an hour, and that was really pushing it, and that was a lot of messing around in the process. We really kind of stretched it out. It is not an hour's worth of content. It's more like 20 minutes at most. I wasn't quite expecting that for the first week, but it's crucial to know that it is the first week
of the multi-part quest that is going to ramp up in intensity. And I think if we keep the word tutorial in our heads as we progress through this, we'll see exactly what they're on about with this. So to start this off, you head to the archaeology campus and you chat with Ali the Wise, and you get, of course, the usual Battle of the Monolith mini quest notification pop up. When Wizard Trindy is also there, of course, we know as Trindine as well. And you know, there's something that you take note of this. The first two people you greet in this mini quest are two Majrat in their human forms, Ally the Wise and Trindine, of course, or Trindy.
So we have not seen Ally the Wise in years. Not since Children of Mar, I don't think.
It's been a while.
The cameo in As a Nazareth Quest may or may not count, but yeah, it's been so much time since he's got any decent amount of content, and I'm very pleased with that, and a lot of people are.
Yeah. And, you know, you look at what was said there. I think this is the point in the quest where Ally has some concerns about what exactly is going on, right?
Oh, yeah.
And this is once again another piece of the picture that everybody should keep in mind, is that these are two key Majrat who are very concerned about what's going on. I know you mentioned he did have that cameo in As an Audra's Quest. One thing I'm wondering, is he aware of everything that happened in that quest?
I'm not entirely sure, because one of the things with Wahizatel is that he is not kept in the loop about things.
Otherwise known as Ally the Wise in his Majrat name.
Yes. You can go to him after Fate of the Gods and tell him, what do you think of Zaros' return? And he pretty much says, well, this is the first I'm hearing of it. So, yeah, that really says a lot about what he's being told and what he's being informed of. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure he knows what happened there, and I'm not entirely sure he knows what's going on here.
Yeah, and, I mean, you talk to him, and he knows Azanadra is on his way to attack the Monolith, and that Sarah Doman has the alliance with elves and druids to defend it, which is what we were alerted to last week, the Saren's forces, Sarah Dominist forces, and Gathixian forces, all on the defensive in this case. When you think of that group, that's a fairly odd alliance that would be put together with this. He says, "I'm assisting Reininger with an excavation of the ruins to the north. She thinks there could be an entrance to an intact area of Sentistan."
Mm-hmm. I think I want to get more into this later.
Yeah, we'll come back to this. Yeah,
there's a significant amount there, potentially. Potentially.
Yeah, and, you know, following from that, we are kicked off into the cutscene, which is another one of Jangix's very famous graphical cutscenes. And I wonder if I have the audio for that. Let me see if I have the audio for that cutscene, because if we do, I can just loop that right into the show with this. So let's just try that out.
None of us realized the significance of the events that were about to unfold. The followers of Zaros came first, descending on the monolith to seize it for the Dark Lord. My fellow ancients, awoken from their tombs, commanded traitor knights to begin their assault. But the worst was still to come.
Oof.
And then following from that, you are kicked in to a battle sequence that is reminiscent of the battle that takes place in Desperate Measures. You are able to control Hellweir. And, you know, this was actually something that was really amusing for me, being able to control Hellweir, because normally you only see him in God Wars 2, and just the fact that you'd be able to control the character, that's a very unique and fun aspect to it. I do have to say that. He was my favorite one to control. You also get to control Commander Zilyana and Therisk's Semphir, who is the Gathixian representative in this case. And your whole goal here is to prevent them from breaking down the barriers that are leading on the road to the monolith. And it's a three-wave combat encounter. And you press the start button at the top of the screen after you've got everybody to where you want them to be. And the battle will just progress all the way through it. And this is the point at which we need to have the biggest discussion of the show, I think. Because for me, it was just a matter of putting people at the choke points. And I didn't really need to do much micromanagement in terms of where the characters were at. And Tanis, I'll get to you in just a moment. But Questscaping, did you do much micromanaging within the battle scene, or did you just kind of leave them at the choke points?
Yeah, it was really just a matter of the choke points for me. So at the moment, though, so we are keeping the word tutorial in mind. And yeah, there was one person on the stream who was having a bit of difficulty with it, but I think on the whole, it was pretty easy. But we've seen in the past, Jagex has done this in Desperate Measures, and that clearly was not easy for everyone. There were a lot of people who were struggling with that. And while no one is struggling with this, I think it's safe to say they'll probably be struggling later on.
Yeah, and Tanis, this is where I'd like you to come in at this point, because you and I had completely different experiences with this. I mentioned, you know, that this was effectively just sit there and let them do their thing. Whereas I'll let you tell the listeners how long it took you to progress through the three waves.
Yep, we had different experience. I bet the next thing you're going to tell me, water's wet, huh, Shane?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well, let me start with like the good things that I really loved, and that is the ability to finally control Hellware. Wow, never saw that coming. It was a total surprise. Like, and that was a lot of fun. Normally, these types of little mini game-ish things, I enjoy a lot. But this one was really hard for me because it wasn't. I know we're keeping in mind tutorial, but a tutorial for me, especially with the way that Jagex had been doing it, would have been a very different thing. For one, like you guys are talking about, you know, keeping the people at the choke points. Yeah, I knew to do that. But we didn't have like any kind of like scene or anything that clued you in to where those were. I'm assuming you guys saw where the people were all going.
They were coming from the south and coming from the west.
There was something else as well. There were wisps traveling down all the paths, the little bright colored wisps.
That's interesting. I only saw that at the very beginning.
I didn't see it at all, so I didn't. I mean, I guess I just, I don't know. The other issue that I had that was just killed me was there was a lot of, given the setting, there was a lot of visual clutter.
Like the trees?
When I'd spin my camera, and I don't know, Shane, how long would you say? Like, I remember it, like, I talked to you when I started, and then right when I finished up, I probably talked to you.
It's about a good 40, 45 minutes or so.
So it took that many, you know, attempts before. Well, oh, wait, no. Oh, man. Oh, I almost forgot about something. I actually think that I completed it a little bit before completing it. And did it again because there was no clear indication that I had won.
Ah.
So I had started again. So, I mean, you know, I had a few, let's call them VI issues, with the mini game, and I mean, by all rights, I really think it is VI issues, and it really was kind of visual clutter because I really liked the mini game at on Anachronia. Like, that was one of my favorite parts of that quest. I had no trouble with it at all. Like, first time
through,
it was
more open space.
Yeah, it was more open, and when you spun your camera, you could still see everything. Like, it, I don't know. It was a different animal than this. I would try to click on the tags for the things, and it would click through it. instead of clicking the, you know, Hellware or clicking Zillianna, it was, you know, like all of a sudden my guy would start running. And that was the other thing. Like, you had to run to maneuver yourself so that you could maneuver the camera to click on the people. I don't know. It was rough for me.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely see how that would be a problem, because it was pretty cluttered with trees and the various non-interactable knights, now you mention it, just fighting around off the camera and not actually having anything to do with the main event. So there's a lot that's moving and there's a lot that's there and there's a lot that gets in the way, basically, eh?
Yeah. I would try to follow the mini-map as much as I could to see... You know, I was trying to identify waves coming in. And finally, just after losing so many times, I figured out where the points were and then, you know, got Hellware at one barrier.
Yeah.
And then got the other ones. But then I was like, you know what? I've had enough of this BS. And I went and suited up and
did it yourself.
Yeah.
Because that is another option, too, that you can fight. As per normal, and
the brute force,
and the thing I think that we need to take away from this is that one of the things that I found as a bit of a difficulty was that I didn't know which character I was controlling. As in, I click on Hellware, and then I would tell him to, you know, go and attack a certain guy, an enemy that was coming in. But he would move to that place instead. And I didn't know if my focus was still on Hellware, or if it was on me, or exactly what the whole story of that was. And, you know, I think it might be a good idea if there was, you know, kind of like maybe a focus ring or something else underneath.
An indicator of some kind.
That would show who you're controlling.
Mm-hmm. I think there was some kind of signifier in the chat box. Where it would go.
Oh yeah, like, right. It says click to move Commander Zillianna. Then you say Commander Zillianna, move over there.
Yeah, that seems like a kind of inelegant way to do it. It does the job, but it's not the most noticeable. Because I think
we just figured out why Tanis had the issues is because you can only view your chat box when you move your magnifier down there. And if you need to look at the rest of the screen, you can't exactly tell what's going on in the chat.
No.
So I think that is the problem that you had with that.
Well, I mean, that makes sense. I've never been a fan of that
interaction through chat.
Yeah, and the only way that I have to counteract that is, I think I could set something up on an alt one to notify
to read
me,
the chat for you, but I mean, it's really not worth doing that for this, because the characters are likely going to be different next week.
Yeah,
I think in general, aside from assistive technology, there's also, if you're looking at the mini map, if you're looking at the map in general to figure out where to place things, then that's generally where you want your feedback to be, your visual feedback.
Yeah,
you see something, you expect a sort of response from there, and not in the corner.
Yeah, and one good thing in terms of visual feedback that we haven't talked about yet is that each of the characters have a target icon on their head that signifies what they're attacking. The options being closest, furthest away, strongest, or weakest.
And that's a whole river from desperate measures.
And you can change that by right-clicking the NPC, and then you get a little menu that pops up, and you can change how they interact.
But how would you know that? How did you know that to do that?
By right clicking in general. I think right clicking is one of the go to things I do. I'm a big examiner, and so I will try to examine everything and find out what the options are in the process.
Right. Which is cool.
And I put Hellware on strongest because Hellware is the biggest beast that was there.
Right, but that seems pretty important. And why hide that behind a right click?
It's
like, let someone know. Like, it's fine to be behind a right click to like set it to that. But
I think what we needed is needed a tutorial. We honestly needed a 30-second tutorial
with some dotted lines that would.
Yes.
It'd show you where the points were, because if I had known where they were, I could have figured that out.
So that work actually wasn't Saren's tutorial, now I look back at it. And so something she was saying was to move them into position, simply click them, and then click where you want them to go. You can change their attack focus by selecting target settings and picking one of the new options presented.
Where did you get that tutorial?
That was right at the beginning. Saren pops up and talks to you.
Right, but she said, did she say right click?
No, she did not. She says selecting target settings and doesn't really inform you of where to find that.
Okay.
And this is after the cutscene, yeah?
Yes, it is. There is also a way to skip that tutorial if you get down there and immediately click away, but then it does ask for a confirmation of whether you want to skip the tutorial or not, so that at least ensures all you right. go through it.
Okay, let's read this here. I must rely on you to command our forces. I put Hellwear and Theris, I don't know if that's how we're supposed to pronounce it, but whatever.
Something along those lines.
Commander Zilyana under your capable command. And then you have to, of course, click through that. Now, after you do that, it says to move them into position, simply click them. And see, I went through that really quickly, but if you didn't, or if you just went through it or you missed that, I guess that would be that problem, Tanis. Do you remember looking at that, or maybe this needed
but then,
simply click them and then click where you want them to go?
Right. Yeah, I knew to do that.
It says you can change your attack focus by selecting target settings and picking one of the new options presented.
Right.
You but think it would have...
That's a right click.
It wouldn't have made... I don't know if it would have made a difference. No, I mean, I don't know, but I just didn't... Like, maybe, like, right-clicking that.
Do you think it would have made a difference to have a more visual tutorial?
I think so.
Like, yeah, like how they have in the actual RuneScape tutorial, where you've got all these arrows popping up around your UI and stuff telling you, click here.
And that's exactly... Or even if something just would have appeared on the center of the screen that says, hey, use this, and here's a tutorial on how to move Commander Zilyana. So.
Didn't we have that in the Anachronia one?
I think we did.
I thought we did. Because I could have swore it showed you where the points were, where they were going to be coming in from.
Yeah, I think it did sort of zoom you around the mini map, the map in general, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
Showing you here and here and here.
And I mean, something like that would have been useful here, as well as the right click options and kind of a circular halo kind of thing showing when you've selected someone. And I think if you do those few things, you fix the accessibility problems in this little adventure.
Well, some. I mean, the trees were. I mean, there was a lot of visual, like, just clutter stuff, but yes.
Someone needs to train wood cutting around there.
Okay. I feel better about that now than when we came in here. I will say that. Tanis, do you feel any better?
Sure.
It doesn't sound convincing. You can say no if you don't feel better.
I mean, I feel better that it's small things that, you know, can be remedied.
Little
very
niggles.
Easily. Yeah, just little things. But, you know, they're little things that made a really big difference.
And keep in mind, we are talking about the margins here. For somebody who uses a screen magnifier and can only see and can't see the chat at the same time as the rest of the game.
Yeah, I mean, in general, I wouldn't be a big fan of only using chat for that kind of thing.
And I feel like we had a discussion about that at some point in the past about using the chat box for interaction.
Yeah, I think so.
But
yeah, there's a variety of things that RuneScape can use as visual markers. There's all sorts of little icons you can get underneath the characters, and that's something well established. I think, yeah, that probably could do with being something more relied upon rather than just switching right to direct text. Or hell, both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I feel better now than we did coming in, and unless you have any other comments on the actual battle itself, Tannis, I'm keen to move on.
No, I just want to say, like, even though I had some issues getting through it, I did really, like, it did, I got really engaged.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I me too. And I wanted to play more, but it ended.
But not for long.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also worth noting that when you complete this, you get a 1 hour 10% XP boost as well. You can see that in your buff bar. And you can replay the battle as well.
Yeah. And I say, I did some just looking around the area we have access to, just to see where it might sort of expand to. I followed the wisps down both of the paths, and it's actually a lot bigger than the space I ended up using on the just this first week.
Yeah.
So the first path goes all the way down to the desert, essentially, coming up from Alcarid.
Makes sense.
And the other one is the bridge that goes to the Polypore dungeon. So it extends pretty far in both directions.
Interesting.
I actually measured it in movement abilities. Oh, yeah.
You mean we're going to have to do this again?
Yeah.
It's going to get bigger. But yeah, I actually measured it in movement abilities. You can surge blade a dive from one end to the middle, but you can't cross the entire thing in a reasonable amount of movement abilities unless you're bringing a power burst of acceleration, which lets you whiz all over the place. So I'm keeping that in mind because I'm interested in this as a tower defense game where it's not a top-down approach. It's not an approach where you can see everything at all times. It is something where you have to actively navigate through it yourself and keep an eye on everything as much as you can.
Interesting. I will just say that on the whole, I'm not a fan of tower defense, but that's just me.
I am.
That's good. After you complete the battle sequence, I mentioned you get the hour-long XP boost and you get plopped back down by Allie the Wise, and he's the only one standing there. That's who has the option to replay the first battle. And Allie is very worried because we're so close to Varrock, and he says right here, right here as I was ordered. And this is where he really starts to unveil his concerns, I think, about everything that's going on. And this is a little nugget of lore that comes from this week. And I think this is what we take away from this, compared to what, you know, people were expecting there to be normally in a mini quest following from this. So
there are a few things I want to say here.
Yeah. Let's see. He says right here, as I was ordered, if Azinotra wants my strength, he'll have to ask for it nicely. For now, I'll remain an observer, though I won't begrudge you for joining the next battle. Stay safe, World Guardian.
Mm-hmm. So on one hand,
hang on. I just want to jump in with one thing here before I pass this off to you. At this point, I ran around for 2 minutes around the archaeology campus with my head cut off like a chicken. Because I thought, is this it? Am I done for this week? And I checked the mini quest journal, and you know there was nothing else to complete. And this was I want to address this before we get into the lore side, because we also have some further lore that piggybacks off this. But in general, this is a compartmentalization of this content that it will be dropping out week by week. And the biggest complaint that I heard, especially from some of the podcast listening community, is that it's like, is that it? You know, we're doing this week, and then this again, something similar size next week, and so on and so forth. And this really spurred some uncomfortable questions I think. And I this is another thing, Tanis, you and I talked about, is that this, looking at this, is this something that is going to become a trend going forward in the future? Because if you look at this kind of interaction of a 12 to 15 minute mini quest or playtime session is exactly the interaction model that you want for a mobile game when you're effectively selling mobile to your new customers. Oh. So what I'm wondering with this, and I don't know exactly why it was split apart as to why we couldn't just go into the next stage or maybe other stuff wasn't ready, or maybe there was a content delay, or maybe it was just decided to effectively to chop this mini quest up into effectively 10-minute segments over the span of the next 3 weeks following from this, is that, you know, on the flip side, for somebody who is skeptical and looking at this from a business lens, this looks like an awful lot like an A-B test for slicing up updates in terms of playability aimed at a mobile audience. And that's something that Tanis and I also had rumbling in the back of our minds with this.
Interesting.
Because imagine you do this for another quest, is that, hey, this week, imagine if Oz and Andra's quest came out and they chopped that up into three or four releases over the span of February. How would you feel having to wait week to week for that?
Yeah, I see what you mean by suiting the mobile audience, because if you're playing on mobile, you're not generally sitting down for long sessions. You're just engaging for short bursts. Mm. Yeah. Can I bring up an old event that also felt a lot like this?
Yeah.
Do you remember the 2018 Halloween event, Till Death Do Us Part?
Yes, that also fits that mold nicely, I will say.
Mm-hmm. That was another one that built up week by week. And there were a lot of people calling it very boring on the first one, but it did evolve. And yeah, I don't know. I can't really think of any other examples of that model, really.
Right. And that's why the skeptical side of me says that this could be an A-B test. But go ahead, Tanis.
Yeah.
So I think the difference, one difference is, if you're looking at Azanadr's quest, that's a full-blown quest, if you split that up.
And I just mentioned that in the most extreme sense that you would see. I honestly don't think it would be a good idea to do that. I just strung it out.
Yeah, I mean, of course. But what I'm saying is, like, there's a lot of content there. When you do that with a mini quest, I don't feel like you have quite as much content to play with. But then again, where do you draw the line? Where do you draw those definitions on quest versus mini quest?
What is a quest versus a mini quest? Because who knows, by the time this is done, this could very well represent a small, short quest.
I just kind of thought of that mid-thought. I'm like, well, I guess that also depends on the definition. But that's why I look at this as like a slice of an introduction. If this was a speech, this would be, you know, kind of like the icebreaker. Hey, how you doing? How the hell you been? You know, this is the long time listener, first time caller,
right?
Kind of thing. you know, in that respect, who knows what we have in store?
Yeah.
I guess.
And from that, I just wanted to bridge that, because I realize a lot of people took issue with the length of this and the fact that this is going to be split up, when in reality there is precedent for putting out an entire mini quest all at once. We've never seen a mini quest like this chopped up, so I wanted to address that if you really strung it out, you could look at it as kind of an A-B test for a mobile gameplay update audience. I don't think that's what they're doing. But I just want to put that idea out there that's something it could feel like. But on the flip side, I mean, what better to get people into what's coming after this and the ultimate conclusion for this than by slowly ramping up the tension?
Well, is it that, or are is a different community starting to feel it now. Like, mobile is touching all of the different, like, sub-communities in RuneScape, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's touched skilling by it's made skilling more AFK, right? It's made it, it's generally a lot more AFK.
Yeah, the Matriarchs, which is a very mobile-accessible bossing experience.
Right, and so now maybe we're seeing the same thing reflected.
Exactly.
In,
and that's why quests. I suggested that. And I mean, I think anybody in the questing community who likes traditional quests and mini quests will have noticed that and said something this week. And I don't think we're at risk of seeing our Azanadra's quests and our Monkey Madnesses in the future be chopped up into, you know, multiple episodes, you know, TV series. Like, I don't think we're seeing that. I think that would be very bad to happen. And I don't think that is in the spirit of questing. But nonetheless, I think there is a model to be discussed and move forward about whether or not there should be an audience for a gameplay session that lasts, you know, 12 to 15 minutes, which is exactly where mobile sits.
Can I say that there was a really bad reaction to it being as short as it was?
Oh, yeah, I know.
All over Reddit and whatnot. And I think if there starts to be more of stuff like this, because, yeah, this is pretty much a proof of concept, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Mm-hmm.
I guess that gets the player base used to it. Like,
yeah.
Oh, now we know that we're going to get specs in short bursts, not come in expecting 2 hours and go, what is this?
Yeah, precisely. And as long as there's a good balance of both, I think we'll be fine. And we just need to, you know, see where that dice falls when mobile comes out in terms of what the expectation becomes.
And hey, look at the bright side. There, in theory, then this would be very few dry weeks because
you'll
be putting
exactly.
It might be smaller pieces, but there's a lot more pieces each week, right?
So. Yeah. Perfect way of looking at it. And this leads us into where we go next with this is that apparently the mini quest is already in the client for the following weeks. And some people data mined the client and were able to see what was on the horizon going forward. We're not going to discuss that content because it's not out yet. And as with anything that hasn't officially been released, everything is, of course, subject to change. But if you want to read exactly where this is potentially going to go, I think they have a section for that on the RS Wiki.
Yes.
Data mined RuneScape. Like, who
I don't know.
To do that?
I don't know.
It generally tends to be a thing that every week or so there are people who dig up what's in the cache and see what's there. And this time around, it happened to be all of the following weeks of the content, story-wise. So there are massive spoilers out there at the moment. It's quite something.
Man.
Yeah, the people in the Clan Quest Guild Council, Derp in Alaska, took it upon themselves to evaluate what was happening, and the decision was made that, you know, anything that is a future spoiler that has not been released yet, we're not going to talk about going forward. And, you know, looking at it when that decision was made, I disagreed with that decision, but, you know, I don't think it is wise to preempt what content is in-game. And that's really all I want to say about this, unless you guys have anything else, and we can move into the wider lore ramifications of what Ali said, that door, and the battle update.
Mm-hmm. I'm really not sure this should be on the main page of the wiki article for this event in general. It is, and it's under spoiler warnings. If you're on desktop, you have to actively
yes.
tick something.
Upcoming
to open
content,
it up.
Spoilers
yeah.
ahead.
But if you're on mobile, you can open up the section for gallery or for transcript, and you can keep on scrolling down, and it will be there.
That sounds more like a little issue with the way it was built, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Well, if that issue is there, should that even be there in the first place? Maybe have a separate page for leaks if they're going to be on the Wikipedia at all?
Yeah.
It's... Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
I just find it scary, because if someone would go through that much trouble, has that much time, I'm guessing they're also a Nigerian prince, but only needs $200. Yeah.
All right. So picking up the lore side of this, Ali is very concerned because he appears to be on the outside here. Saying that if Azanadra wants my help, he'll have to ask nicely.
I like this bit of dialogue a lot. First of all,
this week it is the most impactful piece of dialogue that was here this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some really nice touches. So for one, the player asks, "Where exactly are you standing in this?" And he dodges the question, "Right here. I'm standing right here." So we're not getting an idea of his exact alignment, so that's up in the air. There's also a lovely, nice little touch where he's going, "If Azanadra wants my strength, he'll have to ask for it." And then it switches to the next chat box just so you can get that angry chat head in. And he goes, "Nicely." Just those little flourishes are what I enjoy in the way it's conveyed. But yeah, so we can see a bit of his reasoning for not being entirely on board with this. He says, "I can only hope they remain sensible. We're so close to Varrok." And that's interesting. He's concerned about the people of Varrok. He is ostensibly this Majorat, but
he should also want his empire back.
Mm-hmm. But also, if you know Ali the Wise, he has spent all this time living among humans. And this sort of would suggest that he's developed quite some fondness and enough to actually care about them not being caught in the crossfire.
And he's wise.
He is. Our wise guy.
Yeah. And, you know, perhaps this just could be, a little bit of fleshing out the character and adding ambiguity in terms of where this is going to go. Honestly, I think it's fair to say that everything Ali says should be taken under strong consideration, because what's really standing out to me, Questscaping, you mentioned Varrok, but when you also look at Varrok in terms of the location of the Archaeology Guild and the other stuff that's happening around there, not only are you close to Varrok, of course, but if you look at the northernmost tip of the archaeology dig site, or the Centistan dig site as it's called, and you look just to the east, you can actually see Varrok there, and I think we can go to the door at this point, right?
Mm-hmm.
The ancient door. This is a new addition this week.
Yes, so Ali was talking about this in his initial dialogue, saying that he's actually working with Reinegard with an excavation of ruins there. She thinks there could be an entrance to an intact area of Centistan. And it's interesting, considering what he said at the end there, it's interesting that he's working with Reinegard, because we had her notes last week in that she's not too hot on the plan either. So the fact that two people, two ostensible Zerosians, are working on this plan together to excavate a bit of Centistan, that makes me think there's something more going on than just a bit of archaeology.
Oh yeah, there has to be.
Oh yeah.
And this is probably what they want back, in addition to the monolith. I think it only makes sense.
Is it what the Zerosians want back, or is it the... Or are they going to hijack it somehow because they're the ones not on board with a plan entirely?
Well, obviously the Majorat would want that back because that was one of their holy cities. But Zaros isn't going to let that happen, I think.
So we've got a parallel plan running here.
Yeah. I'd also just like to curiously point out that the entrance to this city is under the Broken Home House.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think that we can read too much into that, but I just thought it was interesting seeing from this side of the mountain you have an entrance to Centistan, and on the other side you have the Broken Home House, one of people's favorite Halloweenish kind of questing updates.
Hmm. Which also goes all the way down to Centistan in the end.
Yeah. Okay, so maybe it makes more sense than than we're thinking about here. But
yeah, because the Majorat Nabor had his asylum there. That was what the Broken Home Mansion was built on.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. What was the thing that you said we should examine down there?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so there are apparently signs around the door saying Centistan dig site. And when you see that, you think, oh, is this a new archaeology dig site?
Probably not.
Conventional ones we've had. Probably not, you say, eh?
Yeah, I don't think so. Do you really think we'd have that with Elder God Wars? I mean, players would absolutely love that. I'd love that. But
hey.
I don't think that's a path we're on. I don't see that sign.
No.
The only exam info I see is the door itself. The buried entrance pathway to Centistan, the ancient capital of the Xerosian Empire.
For what it's worth, I didn't see the alleged sign either. I'm just going off what other people have told me here.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm wondering, this is where I want to bring up another part of the mini quest, which I don't think we've discussed yet, which is the reward right at the end of it being the Shard of Erebus.
Oh yeah, it does say, there is a sign, it says, a sign marking the Centistan dig site.
Hey, there we go.
It's right on the pathway in.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the Shard of Erebus. That was another data mine thing that, or was that data mine, or does that actually show up in the mini quest list?
Yes, that it's in the info where you've got rewards.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Shard of Erebus, that's interesting. First of all, you're thinking shards, you're thinking God Wars dungeons, you're thinking an item you can equip to protect you from everything in there.
Yep.
And it's interesting that here we actually get it before we've got entrance to the dungeon itself. So right from the beginning, we're going to be able to waltz on in there and be unattackable.
Well, not necessarily. We might have to charge it.
Fair enough.
Remember the discussion? Yeah. When was that discussion that we heard about Erebus? It wasn't that. I was reading One Rib's document about Erebus.
I was considering ringing it up.
It's considered to be the Xerosian afterlife, but there's some different theories on what it might be, and I think I'd prefer to, if this pans out going that way, have One Rib on the podcast to talk about that.
Hey.
But, Erebus is canonically the Xerosian afterlife, and that's a great deal of foreshadowing there, I think, about the direction that this is heading at the end of it. I've long been on the bandwagon that this entire thing is going to end with a bunch of gods depowered, like Sarah Doman and the lesser gods around his echelon compared, and I say lesser gods in relation to the elder gods and Saren and Zaros. Saren shattering herself, Zaros perhaps winding up dead. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But there are, of course, other Majorat that could bite the bullet too in this case, as an Adra comes to mind. Was it Izatel and so on and so forth. But
yeah, so One Rib's theory is that the codex, the monolith itself, is Erebus, isn't it?
And that
it was converted that way by Zaros.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a whole other discussion in itself.
Uh-huh.
So I wanna,
do
that with One Rib, but that's in the Clan Quest Discord. Shall we move on?
He's also posted it on Reddit, so it's out there.
Shall we move on to the battle report? Because this is another thing we got this week that was really amping this up and saying that, so far what you got is effectively just the beginning here. And this reads as though, I think we had some of these reports from the first world event, and this is what this reminded me of, one of these reports. So it starts off, on the green fields beneath the monolith, chaos reigned. Elves stood by side with the remaining white knights anxiously awaiting the moment when the frontline defenses broke and they too would raise their weapons to fight. Magic arced from battle staff to help with shield. Steel clashed against steel. Then from the old mansion on the hill, elvish arrows rained down across the Zerosian army. And what this is signifying is that we got a glimpse of just what was happening in terms of what we had to control. But there's a wider battle happening that we can't see currently is what I'm reading into this.
Yeah, I appreciate that way of showing things that the game itself can't realistically show. I think that ties in with the 2D cutscenes we've been receiving as well, yeah. In that art can convey more than simply the game models can.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is actually referring to something that happened in the tower defense itself. Did you see it, Shane? That Saradomin and Nex were there?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I didn't capture it on the video that I took, but on a subsequent playthrough, I did see that.
Yeah, I actually didn't notice them at first, but went back once they were pointed out to me and got a look at them chatting. It's quite something.
Yeah, and it's really an interesting combo when you point that out, because everything we see here shows that this is a fight that is, I think, a lot closer than it should be. Next, the Angel of Death fighting against Saradomin himself. Saradomin raised his staff, aiming a blast of blue light at the winged monstrosity. She instinctively dropped a wing, the shot sailing over her shoulder and dropped to the ground. "You still believe you can defeat us?" she scoffed. Saradomin said nothing. There was no reasoning with Zerosians. A second bolt of light scorched the ground at Nex's feet, and she hissed snake-like, relishing the thrill of battle. She flexed her wings, and in a moment the field was engulfed in smoke, the clash of weapons dulled, punctuated by coughing soldiers. The god raised his arms and cried out. A great wave of force exploded outwards, causing Nex to stagger, and the knights hovering at the edge of the field to fall back. A shimmering barrier separated from the two combatants and from the deadly smoke. Saradomin raised his hands as they attempted to come to his aid. "Your bravery is better suited to the battlefield," he cried. "Rally, defend the monolith."
It's quite a bit of writing, isn't it?
Yeah, that's very expressive storytelling there. And, mm-hmm. You know, I see what we have in game, and I pair this with this battle report, and you put these two together and you get an entirely different picture of what's happening. It makes what we have in game feel like more.
Yeah, it really rounds it out. It adds to the experience. So if you're just seeing a bunch of game models running about the place and getting hit by each other, then that's not so much in itself. But if you contextualize it, if you add this extra texture to it, then suddenly it all gains so much more significance. And I like how this, in fact, flows on from what we saw in the game. So when you see in the tower defense, Saradomin and Nex are having a bit of a standoff, she flies away and sort of taunts Saradomin to come after her. And this, I expect, is the aftermath of that.
Yeah.
So we've got an ongoing series of events. We've got a battle playing out and continuing over the course of the week, even. We've gone Monday to Thursday, and then next we'll have the continuation. So even between the game updates, you've got this continuing momentum of the battle.
Yeah, and if you just look at what we got on Monday, you get an entirely different picture of everything that has built up so far. And I think it's with that perspective and the build-up as we take it throughout the next month or so, or the next few weeks, that you start to have a different perspective. And I think that is what put my concerns at rest.
Yes, I think this will be a lot better received as it goes on.
Well, I guess the only thing I could add to that, though, is think about what it would be like to listen to that battle report as, like, the very beginning of, you know, like, kind of like how the cutscene brings you in a battle report like that, too.
Yeah.
I think it'd be even better.
And hey, maybe that's something we can make happen.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
I don't know. With this, I'm looking forward to next week. I don't know that I have much else to say on this week, unless either of you guys do.
Yeah. I do think I have something to say about the characterization, because if you go through this, this is very much Sarodomen protecting his own troops. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And not giving in to arrogance, not showboating, fighting next one-on-one. He's just concentrating on ensuring that his own people are not killed in this. And that, I think, is an evolution of his character from Azanadra's quest.
Yes.
In which you've got
because
him.
Because remember, there was the huge concern about losing the crown and what that would mean for him.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So. But I think he is more human now and more in touch with his human followers. You've got an important moment in Azanadra's quest where he's about to lash out in anger and order Ceramic Vase's execution. But then he goes, no, I can't do that, and gives them a speech just ensuring that he is on their side and he will do anything to protect them. And this is the continuation of that.
Yeah, that's good. And mm-hmm. it's good to see the character development.
Yeah. It's good to see that in multiple ways, like in the game and in the associated writing. I quite like that this is a bit of a multimedia experience.
Yeah, very good. Very good. We also do have wishes this week, but before we dive into those in a wonderful sheet that David has made us about how you might want to use your Adventurer's Wish, we do have a question before we move away from this whole Battle of the Monolith business from Skystone Jexel, who asks, Wahizatel seems to be pretty fed up with Zaros lately. Wahizatel is, of course, Ellie the Wise. Do you think he'll end up abandoning Zaros or perhaps even joining the side of his enemies?
I would not quite go as far as joining the side of his enemies. I don't think, because I think there's definitely a bunch of push factors away from Zaros for him, but there also has to be equivalent pull factors to other gods or whoever. And I don't think that's there, at least not yet.
And there's a whole, like there's also a whole lineage and what I would almost call brotherhood within the Majorat.
Mm-hmm.
And that they're going to stick together.
Still, though, not many of them are Zarosian these days.
That's right. Like, and that's the interesting thing that we're seeing here is that Azanadra's quest really showed that rift. And ever since the end of Children of Ma, Zaros has kind of been going off in his own different direction to try and become that elder god that he wants to become.
Of course, Azanadra is ride or die for that, and Trindine sure seems to be going along with it, but the other Zarosian Majorat we have, there was Akthanakos, who at the end of Children of Mar was not sure he could call himself a Zarosian anymore, just wanted time to himself to figure out what was going on. And here we have Wahizatel, Ali the Wise, who has been left out of things for years and has nothing to do here apart from stand around and look. And, well, he's definitely reaching a sort of breaking point. And given his doubts about that, what's going on, I genuinely, unless there is something to pull him in, unless there's something to pull him back into Zaros' side, then I genuinely can't imagine him sticking around there for very much longer.
Yeah, and go ahead, Thomas.
Well, this reminds me, like, I don't know, this really this reminds me of, like, someone like a Susan Collins. Is she or is she not going to vote Republicans? She's gonna vote the Republicans.
American
every
politics.
Time, every time,
and so and plus if, it if, also comes back to the fact that for a good chunk of RuneScape's history, leading up to Ritual of the Majorat, the Majorat had that singular thread to all tie them together that they needed that rejuvenation ritual, and after that, they're kind of free to explore different. Opportunities, let's just say.
And that's a good point, because they had to clump together in order to defend each other.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, they are still Majorat. And I just don't know.
Right. And like Questcaping said, there are a good number of the Majorat that are still alive are trending away from that Zarosian influence.
Mm-hmm. There's not as much of a reason to stick around it anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, but if, you know, if art imitates life, they might be drifting away, but they're still going to be there when he calls.
Well, it's not like Zaros really have been calling lately.
Right, yeah. But if it comes down to survival in terms of preventing the Zaros plan from going forward with the Elder Gods and whatever the heck he's up to, or just surviving going forward, which are they going to choose? I think that's a fairly obvious choice that they're not necessarily going to join the faction of Saren, Guthix, and Saren Domen. I don't think that's going to happen, but they will. They're not just not going to give Zaros the blind check, I don't think.
I bet they start an internet conspiracy about Zaros and how he's holding elf children in
here we go.
Dungeon.
Oh boy.
Yeah, okay, sorry. That's a different. I'm sorry, I'm having nightmares lately. Can't imagine why. My RuneScape and yeah. Don't fall asleep listening to news and playing mobile. This is what happened.
You okay?
Yes, everything is fine now.
Okay, everything's fine now. That's good.
Wow. Wow, okay.
Just glad those nightmares aren't bleeding into reality yet, hey?
Right.
That's actually very interesting. Once I had a programming problem and I dreamt I solved it. And that was the problem. And we talked about this in the Clan Quest Discord, and it's happened for numerous people before.
I remember the live stream that happened on Monday. I was actually dreaming about doing the live stream before we did it.
There you go. Back on track here. I don't think they'll join the side of his enemies, but I do see them putting up a roadblock to prevent Zaros from enacting his plans. I think that's clearly the direction we're heading with this. So... Mm-hmm. That's my answer to the question. You guys have anything else on this one?
I think I'm good.
All right.
Yep. No, I'm eager to see what happens.
Yeah. See, isn't that wonderful, Tanis? Mm-hmm. Lore becoming accessible. That could be the sole purpose of this podcast if everything else quit and we had no updates.
Right.
All right. Also this week, we have the wishes are here.
Woo!
We talked about... what you can possibly do with these, and just a recap for anybody who wasn't here last week or didn't watch the show or watch the stream. You have the Inventor's Wish, not a witch. The wish that gives you an ancient gizmo that doesn't consume materials when used if you've unlocked invention and ancient gizmos. Otherwise, it gives you a standard gizmo. You have the Entrepreneur's Wish that gives a pack of non-combat related items, including animal name rerollers, trait rerollers, gender rerolls, captain rerolls, crew rerolls, voyage rerolls, ports resource crates, traveling merchant coupon, writ of freelancing, and writ of barter. That one uses 10% charge. The Inventor's Wish uses 20%. Warrior's Wish includes the aura refresh, life refresh, Soul Reaper refresh, item protection contract. The Wrangler's Wish causes animals in a specified pen to breed, including one guaranteed breed and one extra 40 to 80% chance to breed based on animal type. The Navigator's Wish completes all ports voyages. Archaeologist's Wish completes all archaeology research that's active. And the Wanderer's Wish will reset a daily, weekly, or monthly D&D for 1, 5, or 20%. Of your wish charge. And finally, the Polymath's Wish will give 1 hour of double XP for 1 hour playtime's worth. And with this, we do also have a bit of a guide on how you could best use the Inventor's Wish. And this is something that David, our resident PVM expert, put together. And effectively with this, you want to use your inventor's wish on perks that use Illusionkin or Noxious components because they're very expensive. There's also a case to be made that you might want to use it for a Demon Slayer plus Impatient 4 combo since Third Age components are used and are kind of expensive, but it might not be that much of a priority. There's also maybe at a time where you might want to use the Inventor's Wish on the Caroming perk because Shadow components are expensive, but not as much as the previous options. So what we've done through David's wisdom is we have put together a list of potential perks that you can go for, ordered by preference in terms of what is the most expensive to the least expensive, and we've split it up into a number of categories, including best in slot for PVM and Slayer. We have a two-handed and a main-hand offhand option. We also have a greater ricochet switch option if anybody out there is using greater ricochet that you might want to use in this case with shadow components. We also have a set if you have your scythe and you just want the best in slot for your scythe. We have a set for that too of Aftershock 4 and Precise 2 for Gizmo 1 and Equilibrium 4 and Ruthless 3 for Gizmo 2. And with this we have links to the RuneScape Wiki perk calculator as well. For Slayer, if you're just going for a scythe, you can go with Aftershock 4 and Precise 2, or Precise 6 and Aftershock 1 with Caroming and Equilibrium 2 in your second gizmo slot. We also have a budget option as well with Precise 6 and Genocidal and Equilibrium 4 and Ruthless 3. This is a very budget-focused option, but even if you don't want to spend any money or you don't have these components on hand, this might be something you would consider using it for. And we have also a number of other opportunities with the biting perk that you might want to consider for putting that on various pieces of weapons or armor. And you can find all of these perk combos with the recommendations of what to go for linked in the show notes at update.rsbmb.com. And they're even color-coded so that it shows the most expensive ones in certain colors, and then it filters down based on that.
Thank goodness for David, eh?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I use, prior to this, I used the Precise 6 and Genocidal with Equilibrium 4 on pretty much all of my weapons, and I did notice a DPS increase when I put those on. I don't know how much it would be worth moving up to, say, Aftershock 4 and Equilibrium 2 with Precise 6 and Ruthless 1. I don't know if it's worth it at my level, but if you are somebody who is looking to get into PVM, you definitely want to take advantage of this. And, you know, it's also really good for Iron Man characters as well because they have to farm out all their own components with this. And David said for one of the ones that you get this week with the Inventor's Wish that he put together on his Iron Man character, it took 6 weeks of farming Vindicta to get the appropriate number of Illusionkin components. So this is a big, big boost.
Woohoo! Thank goodness for that.
He said he basically, over the span of his two accounts, got 1 billion in GP worth of free perks with this.
Woof!
Nice.
And, you know, the chances of perks is based on your invention level, and you can boost that with an extreme invention potion. The RuneScape Wiki calculator that's linked to for all these has all of the options available. So, I don't know. I might use these. I haven't decided yet. Tanish, are you going to jump on that?
Probably not.
Okay, what are you thinking then for your wishes? It's hard, isn't it?
It is hard because, like, I want to use the invent. So I do want to use one Inventor's Wish on my spear that I'm making. I know I can tell you this. I will not be using the Navigator Wish or the Archaeology Wish.
Okay.
I'm not wishing for anything in that regard. I've also been really tempted there to go just have a just a oyster orgy down there and see if I could get lucky and get something good.
I mean, at that rate, couldn't you just do clue scrolls?
Yeah.
You could, but I hate clue scrolls.
Fair enough.
I can't do them, so if I ever get anything good, it's going to come right out of that oyster.
Hey, die time.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right. We do have a leads Q&A as well to go through this week. So once again, you can find the wishes information at update.rsbnb.com. But before we go through the leads Q&A, I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters this week because, you know, you guys make everything we do here possible. So this week, I'd like to thank Andrew C., Arvids L., Brock H., Cameron, CGB900, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plonks, Danny C., Diana, Drama Free, A New Arrival, Welcome Aboard, Dream Delayed, Duramax, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Keski, Kyle, Lucky Ducky, Nora, Pernasius, Rastafa, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Soupfinder, Stubbeve, The Bears O.P., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you all of you for your support. It truly does mean the world to us. And in case you're wondering what we're talking about our Patreon offerings at patreon.com/rsbnb, where listeners can support the podcast if you enjoy what you hear and you just want a little bit extra. For as little as a dollar a month, you get early access to the show notes and a mention in the show notes. Plus, you also help fund the costs for hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll get a special VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month and access to high-quality stereo versions of the podcast. For $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out each and every week, and you'll gain exclusive access to the Clip Show, clips that we release to Patreon supporters that we use to build the Clip Show at the end of the year. We're about halfway through, so there's a good amount of waiting that still needs to happen. So if that sounds like your cup of tea, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. We're currently working for a special Patreon mailout whenever we hit the $200 a month goal. We're at currently $179. And, you know, should we ever reach $500, Tannis and I, and maybe some others, will subject our taste buds to some spice with the Hot Ones challenge. I'm looking forward to that.
I'm going to cry.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. How do you feel about spice questscaping?
I'm a spice liker, but ooh, that said, I have accidentally stumbled into things far above my league and regretted it. So let's see.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. If this sounds fun to you, check us out at patreon.com/rsbnb. All right. Well, as mentioned, we do also have a leads Q&A that we need to discuss because this is a big kahuna this week. Big leads Q&A. Mods Warden, Mike and Osborne with Mod Hooli hosting. We're gonna run through this one. We do have some notes in the show notes that you can look at if you want the full rundown of what happened, but we're gonna focus on the big key points here, and Mod Warden had his opening statement, Mod Osborne had his with episodic content, Mod Mike had his. But from Mod Warden, the iOS closed beta is ending on June 1st, and the new minimum requirement for iOS will be iOS 14, and they need to do this because of the way that test flight works in terms of getting everything ready for the actual launch on the iOS store. So we will lose access to mobile in a few days here from the time of recording, which is rather unfortunate. But nonetheless, it says to us that mobile launch is imminent going into June. And with that, Tier 3 has been reached in terms of mobile pre-registration. And they said Tier 4 and 5 are close too. So people are doing well on that. And what pre-registration is that on iOS or Android, you just basically go hit the pre-order button on that, and the app will appear on launch day. And the more people they get to do that, the higher the app will appear on the App Store on launch day. And that is, of course, good for everyone. Now, Mod Warden said that the goal going forward is to deliver more content because that is what he promised when he arrived. He's aiming for 1 to 2 headliners a month, and he's trying through that to find the right balance of making RuneScape more beautiful by bolting things on. And isn't this a discussion we've had, Tanis, with the Dave and Dale tutorial and the avatar refresh, is that we've had this engine since 2016, but there's just been this wait to keep RuneScape looking like RuneScape because you can't push it too far. So that's going to be an interesting balance to see walked here, I think.
Well, that's why I think it was phrased bolting things on rather than creating, you know, new.
And you sometimes just need to shake the box in order to advance things, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those big box shakers was the login lockout. He said that showed the volume of technical debt that the game has, that people, of course, like to call spaghetti code. And looking at the game client and server performance and how all the operations are working, this includes things like account security, is important to avoid future problems, which I think we can all agree with as being so important. But this doesn't preclude fixing quality of life problems, which he equates to fixing broken windows on the house. And that's something that definitely does need to continue going forward.
Yeah, it's, you know, you wish that it doesn't take something like that to get the attention brought to a problem, especially one that has been around and talked about every time. It seems like we have a discussion about something that we can't have. It's always about, well, it's spaghetti code and, you know, technical debt. We know, but how many things is it going to stand in the way of before you just take the time and just get it fixed?
Rip Band-Aid off, so to speak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
And, you know, I just want to point out here that the mobile launch is being seen as that next big growth jump for the game. And the game needs to grow following that, because the sense I'm getting is that the growth going forward to expand the RuneScape 3 base is going to come from mobile. So we just need to be clear that if mobile doesn't work, there's going to need to be a big box shaking and reevaluating on how things go on. So I'd just like to point out that it seems as though that a good chunk of the growth going forward is predicated on mobile. Because that's what I think was mentioned numerous times, is that mobile is slated to be the next huge growth event. So I'm hopeful that it'll work. Yeah. But then next, Mod Osborne took the stage to talk about Elder God Wars and what the episodic content team is up to. And he said last year there were a few people on the Elder God Wars train laying out what the plan was, people like him and Jack. And now there's not a single member of the episodic content team not working on Elder God Wars. The players have now got a first experience of Elder God Wars with this week's update. And as an Audra's Quest can be seen as the prologue, and the Battle of the Monolith is going to be the start of the momentum building going forward. Then this is what I thought was a very key term here. The goal is for the player to be the epicenter of this war, and over the next weeks, this prospect will escalate. Which I think we saw that in also the battle report this week, combining that with what we saw and what was going on in the background near the battle site.
Yeah, and they said there was going to be things going on, but, you know, we're going to be like the Forrest Gump of this Elder God Wars. Like, we're just going to happen to be in the big places like we always are. You know?
Fair enough. And God Wars dungeons in the past have been for one type of player. Elder God Wars will aim to serve everybody, whether it's PVM or new boss fighter, skiller, quester, and there should be something in this experience for everyone. And the team's feeling more confident that everybody will be able to have a specific part of this. And Questcaping, you've just informed me that something's come up and you need to go deal with that. So do you have any thoughts on episodic content going forward, Elder God Wars, before you dip?
Well, it's quite interesting that everyone is on the episodic content team is working on this now. It's I'm appreciating that it's going forward in a lot of different directions all at once. He was mentioning month after month, it's keeping on rolling on. And I like that we get a lot of different tacks to take with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we can only hope that this thing will build and build and build and build to a success. And we'll, of course, be keeping our eye on that. But thank you, Questscaping, for your insight.
Thank you very much. I'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Yeah.
Next up, Mod Mike moved on to Live Ops, and this was one that – this is the section everybody loves because remember the first time he made that appearance?
Oh, boy.
Yeah. He talked about mobile, too. He said discussions on mobile started in 2016. They showed it to players at Jagex HQ in early 2017. They showed it to everybody at RuneFest 2017. This was an indication that it was something that definitely had to be done. And in culmination of the launch, they were recently featured on the Today section of the iOS App Store. It's been a long time, hasn't it? I remember when we first saw that.
It doesn't seem quite as long, but yeah, it has been.
Yeah.
But it's come a really long way in that time.
It has. And I still feel that there's a few rough spots that need to be sanded out along the edges. I don't know how much that's going to be fixed for launch. And I'm hoping that it'll be successful, but I'm not 100% convinced that it's going to be a slam dunk in terms of bringing and retaining players.
Well, I think it's a slam dunk on retention. It's if it's going to bring in new.
Yeah.
That's always been my fear.
Yeah, new players is the big question mark. So. And you can tell from my sigh that I want it to be successful, but I just have this lingering feeling in the back of my head. Because there's been so many other big things that have been tried, and they've kind of, in the past, not been received well. So I'm hoping that this goes off without a hitch. I'm hoping.
Yeah, well, me too. And at the end of the day, hopefully we still end up with mobile out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. The next Yak track will be Yak to the Light, which is the sequel to Yak to the Shadows. It'll be the next Yak track, bringing in Saren and elf themed items. That should be fun. Maybe you can get a proper sniper suit now.
Ooh, maybe. Yeah, I'm might be all about this Yak track.
Beach will be back. Of course, Nick's Ninja Strike is being kept secret. These Ninja Strikes will be resuming very soon. And this is a question that came up in chat regarding the quality of servers. Mod Warden feels that server capacity with mobile won't be an issue, but there's going to be tons of opportunity to improve performance for those who want a faster and better PVM experience. And, you know, he's been around for almost 2 years at this point, and I wonder if he's realized yet to not make these kind of statements, because somebody could read this and say, oh, he's going to make faster and more stable PVM. And yeah, they're going to get mad at him in 6 months when it's not here.
And they're going to be like, for the low, low price of $39.99, have access to the... I mean, I'm just saying,
right.
People on the the Cambridge mob would start saying things like that.
Yeah. And, you know, for what it's worth... this can be taken to see that he understands the question that people always raise about PVM, and there's going to be an opportunity to make those performance improvements in the future. And this led to another question about PVM-only servers, and the answer was no, there won't be PVM-only servers.
And what's the point, right, of that? I don't even... Right? I don't get it. It's not like there's any overlap. You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand. Just don't get that.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they're angling for, hey, make these servers faster and better, right? Right? Can we get these ones as good? I mean, the other guys, they don't need it as good anymore.
Yeah. And in terms of this lag and the performance that people always talk about, He said it's not just capacity. It's the architecture of the game and the code that runs on the servers. And that's actually a large part of the problem. And he said he could go out and buy, you know, the latest and greatest hardware, but it probably wouldn't even help.
Oh. That's my thing, is there's just something about RuneScape combat, especially like in a PVM sense, that it feels like you're fighting in water, quicksand, and nothing reacts.
Yeah, and it comes back to the fact that the back end stuff, in terms of the way the core engine works behind the scenes on the servers, is actually still very old and was written to primarily work with that Java client. It's written in Java, which is not what you write high-paced server applications with in this day and age. And in terms of dealing with this, he said he understands this problem and sees the big problem, wants to work on the future, and he called this a Warden Promise. And I took the liberty of applying the trademark feature to that name, the Warden Promise.
All right.
And when it comes to mobile and where the traffic is coming from, he said there might be a different global audience that has to be addressed, resulting in the problem needing to be looked at more holistically. Which I had to do a double take on with this.
So they still have high aspirations of Asian markets?
That's what I got from this, yeah. Asia and the Middle East, probably. Because right now, you look at the primary RuneScape audience, it's North America and the EU. Well, UK and Western EU primarily, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, where are the biggest emerging markets in terms of mobile and mobile gameplay? Asia, Middle East, Africa, Eastern Europe.
Places that don't even have like regular computers.
Exactly.
For internet. Yeah.
Exactly. And there's a good case study of this in the real world. You're familiar with the game World of Tanks, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, their North American server at peak will have, you know, 10,000 people on it, right? But they got multiple Russian servers and Eastern European servers with tens of thousands of people playing it. And their game is written to the point where you can go back and use a dual-core computer from prior to 2012 and still run the game at 60 FPS. But on the other hand, it looks like a potato, just like RuneScape. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But on the other hand, if you have a modern desktop computer with a multi-core CPU and good GPU, you can make it look like a completely different game and play with those same people. So I think that's what this global audience comment was referring to. And I'm going to be very surprised and very pleased if RuneScape Mobile does take off in these markets.
Well, yeah, I mean, if that happens...
Quite honestly, it has to.
There's proof.
It has to.
Yeah.
Because if we were going to, you know, reach saturation now, you'd need to take a different path for the desktop client in the Western market. So, more on that in the future, I think.
More on that when the financials are released.
Yes, very good point. Very good point. Very good point. I should check for the 2020 financials soon. Thank you for reminding me. Hearts of Ice will be phased out and replaced with oddments.
Oh. Really?
Yeah, and they said this time there will be a transparent discussion and a news post on this, so they don't repeat what happened with the rare item tokens.
Oh, that's awesome, though, because I do not use them, and it's wasted. So that is great. Great change.
No word on the ETA yet. Community questions that came up. Elite Dungeon Bans. Yeah. We talked about this last week. No need to beat a dead horse on that, I don't think. But Mod Warden had a very interesting perspective and different than the rest of the community on this. He feels that there shouldn't be subjects that people are afraid to talk about. And he says he's heard the concerns about the precedents being set going into the future. And in that future, he wants everybody to be aware that the account should be treated as precious and permanent bans should be taken very seriously. And the message around abuse should be looked at. And the way he sees it is that the numbers were relatively low, in the low hundreds, but there's concerns that this might encourage some behavior in the community, which is exactly what we reiterated. Mm-hmm. And this was done within an existing policy, allowing for some permanent bans and two-week bans. So going forward, he wants to look at the player policy, and if the decision was based on this policy, he feels that the policy is in the wrong place and it provides a terrible player experience.
I get that too.
And this led to Warden Promise number 2, a meaningful change on how this area can be made better and how Jagex operates. The precedence is only as good as the lens who it's held, as it's held through, and how does the policy operate? How does Jagex respond to exploits? And there's also a timeliness aspect, and has asked the team to provide better visibility on exploit issues. So this sounds like a complete revamp of how ban policy is carried out in game.
No, you know what you know what that sounds like?
What?
Number one, we should have been setting a precedent with the people that were making this a big issue and recording it, making videos, right, and all this. Two, the fact that they ever had to do that to get it, you guys to fix it, that's a bigger problem. I mean, that's what I'm reading between the lines.
Yeah.
That he's saying here.
Yeah.
He's saying, yes, A, that's a problem. B,
and it's good.
Not fixing it in time is a bigger problem.
I didn't look at it the way you just looked at it, which is really good, because it shows that he's amenable to community suggestions, which I think is good.
Well, it seems kind of like an even-handed approach, right? Where it's that's not right.
It's like, is he on the side of the players with this or on the side of his staff? And it almost feels like he's on the side of players here.
Well, I mean, what is it? Like, if you piss everybody off, you're probably on the right track.
Yeah. <know? laughs> He's also asked the community team to work on providing better visibility into these issues. And he admitted that the Elite Dungeon 3 issue festered for too long.
Well, there you go.
And I think that's what everybody said about this as it completed, which, you know, once again, this is, I don't know if he does this intentionally, but the way he's handling this, if the community sees action on this in the next few months, is going to build more trust and put this issue to bed. And I don't know if he's doing that intentionally, but it's a very persuasive argument.
I mean, at this point, Shane, I really think it's kind of how he is.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times does someone have to kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I really take somebody at their actions. You know, I always say the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior.
Yeah.
And I mean, at this point, I have no reason to doubt.
And, you know, there'll always be those doubters, but nonetheless, I think this is positive. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see anything, you know, but positive. I think it's good to recognize that, yeah, this sat too long.
Yep.
But at the same time, I think if you read between the lines, there is also a implied
we gotta do better.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta do better. Yep. Specifically the community team. Scorpions and Sophonim, two fixes on the way about the feather trick that was alluded to last stream. Abyssal Demon Slayer creatures that Mod Shogun built, they have been implemented. They're with the lead artist. No ETA on the moment of when they'll appear. imbalance about the combat styles being addressed, and this is something David talked about with the Matriarchs, how Mage is relatively underpowered now in the eyes of many, and the way they're approaching this as an episodic team is that certain aspects of each style could be pushed up, but Mod Osborne just wants to kind of let it ebb and flow with the upcoming updates. And with magic sitting lower, who knows? There might be an opportunity in Elder God Wars to raise magic up, which is, you know, reading between the lines, hey, yet again, there will be something that helps magic in Elder God Wars.
Well, and think about this, though. I mean, it wasn't a year, but 2 years at the absolute most when the meta was magic, right? That was the four-tick. That was the everything with magic. Magic, magic, magic,
yep,
magic.
Yeah, then the spear came out.
And now, I mean, I guess it's ranged. I'm not. You have to talk to David about how that transition happened.
Greater ricochet.
I mean, we've seen that ebb and flow that he's talking about.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. It's better than, you know, consistently trying to keep everything on one pace and not knowing if they're going to get there.
Also, I'm just waiting for it to be melee. It'll be our turn.
Right. Well, I think it was already our turn with the Masterwork and the Spear of Annihilation prior to Greater Ricochet.
So, well, yeah.
Also on the combat train, talking about free death weeks, are there any thoughts of reworking death costs? And this is a huge one for PVMers. We talked about this in a whole monthly bit in itself about how people always say PVM makes so much money, and we dove into that and showed that, you know, hey, if you're learning a new boss or you're involved in a high-level setup, you can have deaths, you know, dealing 10, 15 mil or even higher. And they say the success of Combat Week is due to the satisfying feeling of not having to worry about death in terms of the cost for high levels or the fear for new PVM players. And they said a design has been pitched to the Combat Council. And they're looking into it to see if this is something that will be put on the schedule in terms of revamping death and death costs.
You know what? It's like we talked about. It doesn't even have to be something that is all the time. Like, you could lessen it at the release of bosses to, like, a combat week when bosses are released without death. Because we learned, was that a bit that we talked about, that's where the cost really comes in. It's that first couple of days. Yep. It's that learning of it.
Or trying to push yourself for that next Enrage set at Telos.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And with that, there are plans to bring back free death weeks with some of the new combat encounters for Elder God Wars.
Well, that's good.
So, that's right there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something I was wondering, how has the login lockout impacted development time? And they say the remainder of the year, aside from the Matriarchs, is on pace as planned. The wishes were supposed to come in earlier, but they decided to put the extra polish on that. So apparently we're at the right pace.
Yeah.
Huh? Right now with everything. My only question... I guess then the thing would have been is that what Battle of the Monolith would have been the May update and Matriarchs would have been March. So I wonder what would have been April. Divination, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
I guess maybe just at a different position in time then. Are there plans to create more elite dungeons since those are a tech that they have available to them now? And it was contemplated for Elder God Wars, and it's something that can be used. And they said contemplated. So I'm leaning towards that, meaning no, right?
That's what I would
take
out of it. Or
could they be saying, yeah, we contemplated it, and we actually decided to do it.
Nah, that's not how that usually goes.
All right, fair enough. High-level bosses this year? Yes, you can expect high-level bosses, Mod Osborne said very cheekily. And in terms of quest lines being picked up this year, specific mentions to gnomes, monkeys, or penguins, the goal is to weave these players into character, into stories going forward, and there's no plan as of yet for specific types of quests this year. Which is a little bit sad for us questers, but hey.
I mean, you did have the front half of the year, right?
Yes, we did. Lots of quests with that. Yeah. We're not complaining. Yeah. Treasure Hunter walk animations you can't currently get will be added to the Oddments store eventually.
Oh, yes.
Right? That's good. The experimental tech updates we saw at RuneFest 2019, including pathing and high-tech combat, they underscored those were very early experimental tests, early into research and development, optimization, and the works. They haven't been ruled out or written off, and they need to figure out where they'd fit into the plan. But the main message here that they're pulling from all this is that the game should be more responsive, in particular looking at high-tech great combat. It surfaced many other issues that needed to be solved as well. In the same vein as server performance, there are other things like this that need to be addressed first, which makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted a name purge prior to mobile launch in terms of getting some other names. Nothing in the plans currently for that. Any plans to update player-owned house visuals? This was the kind of behind-the-scenes way of asking for a construction rework.
Keep trying.
Yeah. Put simply, it'd be the same size as the avatar refresh. And you get more bang for buck with the avatar refresh because everybody sees it and everybody gets to interact with it every day.
We just can't win for losing with that.
No. Yeah. In terms of an actual construction rework, they took this question head on. They're aware of it being a perpetual request. It might be on the short list. I think this is the most we've got in a number of years on this. And they know it would bring so much to the game, and they've seen actually many great proposals and pitches put forward to the team recently, and it's just a matter of finding the time for it. And Maude Osborne said there's a problem at the heart of the construction skill that they'd love to handle. So obviously, our construction contracts last year did not fix the problem. So it sounds like construction rework might not be off the table.
Well, and nor should it be, because, you know, we talked about what the contracts were and how it was another training method, but this is in no way.
It doesn't fix the problems that exist.
Yes, exactly.
I think that's the most optimistic we've ever seen them on this question in the, you know, last 5 years or so since 2016 when it was last talked about seriously.
Yeah, well, I mean, we keep asking. I mean, every live stream.
Yeah.
It's been brought up for 5 years. It's obviously something that people are really interested in.
I wonder. Maybe that could be, no, you know, this would be big. I was thinking maybe that could be the 2022 theme, but we'll see. Free-to-play updates going forward. Battle of the Monolith is actually free-to-play, believe it or not.
Huh.
We didn't touch on that earlier, but it is. Beach will be free-to-play, but there's nothing hefty to currently announce for free-to-play. New content-wise, there will be more cosmetics from Yak Track put into the Oddments store. Elder God War Slayer monsters. They said this is probably too much of a question to ask and answer right now. And they feel that they needed a code word when they weren't supposed to talk about things. And that code word was broccoli.
All right. So we can't talk about broccoli.
Nope.
Okay.
And maybe that's a code word for us that it means it's actually happening.
It sounds like there's discussions being had, huh?
Yeah. I would say that based on this answer, there's definitely going to be something Slayer-related to focus on there.
Mm-hmm.
And other rounding up the stream, there's a discussion on loyalty points in terms of just needing to have a wholesale look at how that system works and what it should represent and how it should carry itself out in relation to Oddments because there's lots of overlap. And the big question that everybody loves asking, are there any skill reworks in the queue like the mining and smithing rework? Nothing planned currently, they say. and there will ultimately be skill updates like the divination and construction update mainly.
Yeah.
So there we have it.
Yep, there we have it. It's official.
And I think if they did something like the construction rework, it would fit into that category. So there's nothing planned currently, but we'll probably hear about it if and when that happens. So there we have it. That's the live stream. And I think with that, we can move on to our picks of the week. I'll go first. So Google I.O. was last week. And, you know, do you remember a product called Google Wave? I don't know what you were doing in 2006, 2007, but this was the heyday of my university experience.
Yeah, I guess I would have been doing the same thing.
Yeah. And one of the things we had back in the day was something called Google Wave. And this was very much the precursor to Google Docs and live updating documents and spreadsheets and notes. You could comment directly with other collaborators and share documents and whatnot. And Google Wave, like most things Google does, was eventually sunsetted. And instead, we now have Google Docs, of course, which we make use of each and every week on the podcast. But one of the things that came out of I.O. this year was a number of Google Workspace updates that foster better collaboration. So I'm just going to run through some of these that you can actually now do in Google Docs and Google Meet. The first one is that you can actually @mention people, files, and meetings within a Google document. So rather than hyperlinking like we do, we could actually just put in an @mention to a specific document and have it pop up. And then when you click that, you'd be able to see into it. And, you know, I might actually try that this week on our show notes and see how that goes. Normally, I export it as an HTML copy, and that's why we use links. But nonetheless, this one is really neat. So I could actually @mention you right now, Tanis, in our document, and it would give you something to draw your attention to. So that's a fun thing that goes back to Google Wave. Another thing they're doing is that for anybody who's a writer, oftentimes when you're writing, you just want a distraction-free user interface. So what they've done is they put out a setting in Google Docs that allows you to have a new pageless format where you can just write, and it's got a very, very minimal toolbar at the top of the screen. It puts the focus on everything that you're writing, and you can just write documents, you can embed spreadsheets and presentations. It looks really good. There's also emoji reactions. Now, I don't know how many people are going to be doing that, but there's also something they're talking about in terms of assisted writing features that have stylistic suggestions, like telling you to avoid a passive voice or offensive language, or options if you want to use them to make your writing sound more inclusive. There's also connected checklists. You'll be able to assign checklist items to other people and see these items in Google Tasks directly from Google Docs. There's going to be table templates. And one of the biggest ones is that you'll be able to connect directly up in a document to a Google Meet meeting to have that chat discussion and video call for that document. So what we could do here, if we wanted to do this and we weren't using Discord, an example for the podcast would be we could have one of our production meetings for our monthly bit and do that directly within the Google Docs document itself. And the last one I mentioned is a new timeline view for Google Sheets that I've never seen a spreadsheet do this before, but if you have a spreadsheet that is organized by date, it will effectively allow you to put it into a scrollable timeline, which is something I haven't seen before. So that's actually really interesting for scheduling and whatnot. So yeah, lots of fun things on the Google Docs side to come out of I.O. this year. And, you know, this is something I use daily, so these are wonderful features for me.
Very cool.
All right. I want to hear what you've been up to with your pick of the week.
So I just noticed today something on my wish list on Steam. I got a notification that it was on sale, so I had to run over to Steam and check it out. And my pick of the week for me this week is the Universal Sandbox. It's just an awesome. It's just an awesome game. It's a space simulator. I've seen it a lot in like YouTube videos that I watch and stuff, and like on space, and a lot of times they're using Universe Sandbox, and I'm like, I've got to get this. I've got to get this. And I saw it come up today on sale, and yeah, I wanted to share it with everyone else because I think it looks like it's going to be just incredible. And it sounds like you've even had some experience yourself with this.
Yeah, I have the classic version. This is a newer version that came out in 2015, it looks like. But there was a classic version that I had. And, you know, it you can do literally whatever you want to do. And just to give you an idea of one of the things that I did at one point – I set it so that our solar system, I doubled the number of planets in our solar system from 8 to 16, so it went out even further. Then I increased the mass of Jupiter to the point that it would have the same mass as a black hole. And everything in the solar system, every asteroid, every planet, every moon, you know what happened to it. It fell into the black hole and was obliterated. And, you know, I didn't get to see the end result of this because I crashed my computer with it. Or crashed Universe Sandbox. So you can do some really crazy things with this.
I'm definitely, like, yeah, I can't wait. I am going to find Planet X. It's going to happen. I'm going to figure it out with my little Universal Sandbox game, and I'll let you know how that works out. Shane.
Yeah, another fun thing to do is that you think binary star systems, those are easy to do, but if you just add another sun to that star system, you've got to make sure it's at the right weight in the right position. Otherwise, it might just end up combining and blowing up the other star that's there. So creating binary systems is hard. Trinary systems is even harder, but that's a fun little challenge to do as well. So this is a wonderful pick of the week. I'm glad you picked this.
Awesome. Well, thank you. And yeah, it's a ball. Yeah, that's the pick of the week.
All right, let's move on to some achievements.
All right, starting off with Delinda EST with 120 Slayer on the 26th. Then we had Drizzen with 120 Herb Lore on the 26th. We have Kedgeworth with 120 Defense on the 26th. And we have, Lore Deluxe with 99 Fishing on the 26th. We have Sire Aces with 120 attack on the 26th. We have Jura Chris with 99 archaeology on the 25th. We have Biora with 99 woodcutting on the 25th. We have WM Penguin with 99 Herb Lore on 25th. And we have Ariel with 99 Hunter on the 24th. Ariel again with 99 Fletching on the 24th. We have Deniz with 120 Ranged on the 24th. We had God Shaman with 99 Prayer on the 24th. We had Nordic Falcon, 99 Divination on the 24th. We have Panda in Love with 99 Prayer and Mining, both on the 24th.
Nicely done. Continuing on the 24th, we have Prodigal Gaz with 120 ranged, Skeets with 120 archaeology, Surge Aurora with 99 strength, Tim 2 with 120 slayer, Ariel got 99 runecrafting on the 23rd, we have Badger with 99 archaeology also on the 23rd, Crazy Leg 722 got 99 dungeoneering, Kiki got 99 divination, Madhouse SC got 99 thieving, Rolladude 540 got 120 invention, Rune Dragon got 99 dungeoneering and 99 runecrafting on the 23rd, Spy Human got 99 fishing on the 23rd, Twisted Soul got 99 defense on the 23rd, Ultra Dog 177 got 99 magic, Vivian with 120 dungeoneering, Crazy Lake 722 with 99 thieving on May 22nd, Drizzen got 120 invention on the 22nd, Duke Juker also got 120 invention, Shanty You Stay with 99 Herblore, Dr. Bruce with 99 runecrafting, Nordic Falcon with 99 agility, Prodigal Gaz again with 120 constitution rather on the 21st, Rex Compidium with 99 thieving, Surge Aurora with 120 ranged, Twisted Soul with 99 attack, and Ultra Dog 177 with 99 summoning, all on the 21st. Nicely done, everyone. Nice. Very nice. All right. Before we wrap up, I'll just mention that we are still running our Help Wanted form. You know, I think we're going to keep this open for the foreseeable future and see if anybody else ever wants to put their name in for podcast writing, podcast guest hosting, article writing, and more. We just want to know what kind of player you are, what your RuneScape name is, and where we can contact you. Fill that out at update.rsbnb.com/help. And let's talk about what we've been up to. What have you been up to this week?
You know, pretty much the same thing. Once I finished the herb lore, I went to archaeology. And then even when it felt like it stopped so abruptly this week, when double XP was all over, I have still stuck to my archaeology. Because, you know, I'm still working on 120, and, you know, it'd be nice. I mean, I've got my spear tip now, but another one wouldn't hurt. You know, it might be all right.
You're trying to pull the me.
Trying, yep. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I've just been doing some of that. And I feel PVM coming on.
Oh, no.
I really do. I feel like it's going to be a PVM summer. Yep. I'm trying to finish, you know, get archaeology finished up.
All right. Are we thinking Raksha level, Matriarch level, or Raxor level? God Wars 2?
Dude, I am positive that if I had like a spotter with me and really tried, I could probably get through a Raxor.
Mm-hmm.
Like I really think I could. So probably at that level. And then maybe move on to Telos.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Not like big enraged or anything, but I think I could at least beat him. I'm not looking to camp bosses and stuff like that. I'm just looking to, you know, be able to do it.
All right.
Might be kind of cool.
Fair enough. As for me, I finished double XP, and, you know, I think I wound up with having like 18 hours left or something before the timer started ticking down. But I got to 112 Slayer, and I had to throw in the towel and finish it with woodcutting.
Okay.
I just couldn't. Cool. I just had to stop. Slayer dummies were what I discovered as my favorite training method during double XP, but nonetheless, might pick up the woodcutting again. I'm not sure. I want to see where this whole Elder God Wars saga leads, whether it's something that will keep on giving like archaeology did, or if I move on to the next Yak track, that's another question. that might come up. But what I've been doing in the meantime this week is I've just been gathering divine energy, because I think it was like down to probably like 8 hours or so left on all of my for a full set of equipment. So I was running low on charges, so I just picked that up and did a few hours of that and recharged, so to speak. So
a few hours. I'm surprised you didn't have that done in like a half hour. 15 minutes.
I didn't use the world.
Ah, okay.
I didn't use the world, no. I did use the relic, though.
Well, you know, like you did.
You gotta use the relic at this point if you haven't. So. But I look forward to what's coming next. So I think at this point we can wrap this one up, unless you have anything else, Tanis?
Nope, that's it for me.
All right, well, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google, Pocket Cast, Spotify, and YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. Give us a like, subscribe. It definitely helps the channel out and discoverability of the podcast. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone. See you then.
See ya.